you need a weekly recap. Catch up with What's Climbing Friday mornings at 10. The Charts on CFRC.
And you're listening to... Wait a minute. No, it's 7 o'clock and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. Oh, yeah, and the continuation of the Aboriginal voices.
Yeah, that's all. That's all because we've both been eating here, and you're.
we've been on. I had 4 potatoes.
Yeah, I hope they were good.
I'm getting a little tired now.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, and your salmon burger. I know you don't like fish, but the salmon was okay.
I'm not a fan of.
I gave you half of one.
It doesn't matter how much you give me. I won't eat it.
Hey, that reminds me. I heard that Curved Lake First Nations has gone into aqua production.
Aqua production?
Yeah, so they've like got a great big water? Facility, yeah, with water, and they have fish in it, tilapia. Nice, that's a nice mom fish. Okay. And so they are raising tilapia for the market, and then the byproducts have. Go into...
Where was that?
In Curve Lake. Just
Yeah.
Just the northwest of Peterborough.
Like aquaculture or no?
Aquaculture is the fish. Egg. And then
I don't know.
And then they work with... and they put it through and they grow plants.
Yeah, yeah. Good.
Much like the greenhouse you know, that's nearby. So it's successful now. It's working. And they're supplying the community with
nice
produce and fish.
Nice.
Yeah, it is excellent. Something people may think about, you know, for their community, a food bank.
Okay.
Build a great big food bank.
Humongous food bank.
Well, yeah, 40,000 square meters.
I would build a huge food bank.
A big swimming pool.
And I would put... A and P on the side of the building.
You would. What does that stand for?
Atlantic and Pacific.
Okay.
You don't remember going to the A&P?
I do remember that, yeah.
My gosh, I wish they'd bring that back. They brought back Zellers.
Oh, did they?
But they should bring back the A&P. Metro. Well,
Metro, is the A&P.
Bring us back A&P.
Well, that's what it is.
Well, I'll call it A&P.
Okay. Anyway, go ahead. You have a news item.
Everybody
which is,
out there doesn't know what I'm talking about. Yeah. They look at me with this glazed over look, and I have to say.
Yeah. That's okay. You have the news item that you brought up earlier, and I think it's important to talk about more about that wildfire that took out an entire community.
Yeah, just...
Yeah, I know.
I've since looked for other things.
Uh-oh. Yikes.
You mean Collins?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so they had trouble evacuating. They had to do self-evacuation because the powers that be could not do it.
And what powers are they? The federal government?
Provincial government. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. They did pretty well on their own, I think. They got into a boat and got in across the water there. What water would that be, Doug?
The lake.
Collins Lake. Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, I mean, if you can't have a little bit of...
Yeah. Anyway, but no, it's
so
interesting because
they did a self-evacuation. I asked why is it that it's that way?
Why weren't they covered? Yeah, okay.
And there is a jurisdictional legal policy gap. So it's a point of contention by the community's legal representation and leadership that is, I'll say, Collins First Nation. Is not formally recognized as an Indian Act band/reserve by Ottawa. despite its residents being recognized as First Nations people.
Oh.
So I think that leaves them out.
Mm-hmm. Outside of the supports.
Yeah, support system.
Those supports are food and shelter, transportation. Yeah,
I would hope, and like I said before, there are other places, I assume First Nations places, that would be collecting food, resources, clothes, toys for the people there in Collinshurst.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Collins First Nation, who I guess are not actually in Collins First Nation anymore. I don't know the communities up there,
somewhere.
But they've...
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Like, that's even up in the air, right? They don't really know what's going on, so...
Yeah, those forest fires are taking out all kinds of people and their livelihoods, but also just think of all the animals that are being forced out or don't know, and they just die.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I think we should stop there. But there are people who are trying to support all the folks who've been forced out of their communities.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't even really know if there's like a phone number you can call or anything. I've not been able to find one.
I understand that the Canadian Red Cross.
Oh, okay.
Might be a place to consider going to, but there, you know, if you're not sure, you check the government website and they'll give you. I wonder if CBC has their website set up for reputable groups that are working together. If you want to donate whatever it is you have, money or items.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I have a song for you. And it's Adrian Sutherland with his song, Respect a Gift.
Okay.
And we have coming up a couple of interviews, one with Kristen's going to come back and talk about summer projects to do with your family outdoors. And also we have Cindy Blackstock. She's going to talk about, the children and children in care. So you ready?
Cool. Yeah.
We could go for that, I guess.
Where do we go from here? The end is surely near. Where do you go, my dear, to mend your broken heart? Are you a slave, my friend? Are you the living dead? You can't change the world if you don't do your part. Yeah. You gotta give it all you got.
Well, Kristen, I'm glad we're here outdoors, and I'm glad it's a sunny day. Oh, mm-hmm. My goodness, hot, though.
Yes. Yeah.
I've heard a lot of people complain about the heat, so we're going to talk a little bit about what they could do in the shade.
Okay.
Or later in the evening. Or
yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, how are things going with your project that you were doing with building an app?
It's going very well. Yeah. And so I've been working on a nature app, and it's really been inspired by the things we talk about on this show. And it's a way to make this content more easily accessible, I would say. A way to, you know, as we can't be everywhere at once, but an app can be. So it's a wonderful way to share the information.
And what's your center called?
This is called Scenic Splendor Nature and Recreation Center. So I do have a Facebook page where I share everything that we talk about on the show that I do here. And so that's a great place for people to come and just see what we're up to here.
And it's a beautiful spot because you've got mature deciduous trees around, mm-hmm. not very many.
They're at the back of the property and the side.
They're all around. But also short grass, long grass, there's a lot to look at here. The center itself, look, I think that you did a lot of building around it. You didn't build the whole structure, but it certainly, you've done a lot of work inside.
Yeah, it was essentially an Amish shed, so it was the shell. So it came with, you know, the exterior walls and the roof. And on the inside, we finished it. So it's fully insulated. All of the boards inside were milled on the property, all of the window frames and everything like that. And the ceiling and the solar lights, all of that was put in by us. So it does have electrical here if we ever did want to hook it up to power or generator or something like that. But yeah, it was a lot of work that my kids and my dad and my brother. It was a family affair. We worked on this.
It looks fabulous. And in fact, I would call it, well, it's red paint on the outside.
Yes.
With white trim.
Yeah. It was supposed to sort of signify an old-fashioned schoolhouse. Mm. We set it up when we were still homeschooling, so we wanted it to be like that. So we call it the schoolhouse, this little building. And then we have a few other outbuildings here. An old drive shed that we now call the clubhouse. And we have a giant table that I built in there out of some very old milled boards that were like 4 inches thick. And we built an outhouse to match the schoolhouse. And we have an old log cabin on the property. So there's some outbuildings here. But this particular one is quite new, and it's called the schoolhouse.
And it's not just for schooling.
No, it's not.
It's also for, as you call it, a retreat, a nature mm-hmm. retreat. Mm-hmm. And so what are some of the things that you've done here at the center?
Well, the first thing I did, I sort of did a warm-up activity, and it was with a few friends, and we did a paint night with some cedar coasters. But the first sort of public event I did was an escape room, and it was a one-room schoolhouse escape room. So it came with the backstory and the treasure that you were looking for, and you had to solve all these puzzles, and it was all set back in the late 1800s. So that was the first thing. Then there was an outdoor summer camp for kids that year. And there's been a few summer camps, a few field trips, and most recently a poetry retreat that was hosted by a friend of mine.
You also have accessibility items that come up. One of them is for sign language,
mm-hmm.
hard of hearing or hearing impaired. And you tell me about those sessions that you had for that.
So I incorporated that into a forest basking session that I ran. It's very similar to forest bathing or forest therapy. Basking is just a word that really resonated with me. And I incorporated the sign language. I used to teach it during homeschooling, and I have some family members that have some limited verbal skills. And so it's a great way to communicate, and I wanted their cousins to, you know, learn these things. And I thought it was a really nice way to communicate with nature, because nature often speaks to us silently. And so in the forest basking sessions, we were able to greet the forest in different ways when we were entering, and say thank you when we were leaving, and focus on sort of our connection and our relationship to the forest. So that's something that I've just sort of incorporated in to all of this nature stuff that I've been doing.
And so back to your app that you're building,
mm-hmm.
then what's the purpose of the app? And then what have you got on it that I would be putting data in?
Okay, so the app has two parts. The first part is a weather tracking section. So there's just 5 pieces of data that we're collecting. It's just simple, so you can log in every day and just track something. So it marks your time, and you enter in the temperature. And then you can choose some weather features. So there's the sky, and it will give you, you know, sunny, cloudy, or stormy, and you just select the one that matches. There's a precipitation button, so of course snow or rain or hail. And then there's a wind icon, so you can choose no wind, gentle, medium, strong, and that's your weather data. And so it will graph the data for you. It will show you, you know, at the end of the month, I did it for the whole month of May as I was developing the app. And I can tell you that there were mostly sunny days in May, and the wind was mostly gentle. And it's just nice to kind of have that information if you're paying attention to the weather at all. And then the second part of the app is the nature connection section. So the weather kind of gets you into the app every day, because we don't always think about our nature connection every day, but we're pretty much all have our eyes on the weather daily. But the nature connection is where you can record a nature observation. So the other day when I was out here with my sons, we actually just put in our first mini putthole, which is another thing we're adding to the center. But we saw we said it was a blue butterfly. I know it was a moth. But we saw our first blue butterfly of the season. So that was one of my observations. And then there's an opportunity to write about a goal or desire you have to connect with nature. And I think that is important, because we don't all have the opportunity to immerse in nature every day. We do have busy lives and lots of errands. So it's not a pressure to engage every day. But when you do have a moment, you can go back and say, what were the ways I really desired to connect with nature or immerse in nature? And then, you know, when the weekend comes or you have the opportunity, you can go back to one of those items. It gauges how you're feeling with nature, your connection to it, whether it's peaceful or calm or inspired. You can kind of select it, or you can input your own feeling. And then there's 2 pieces of content that I've included. So the one is the ASL Nature Word of the Week. So this week we're on grass. So there's no images or videos linked to it, but there is a description of how to do these signs. And you can click whether you practice that day or not. So you can practice all week long. And then the last piece is a nature connection activity, which is sensory based. So it's going to be one of the senses. And this week I know that it is to go experience the different scents coming from all the new blossoming flowers. And so that's not something you have to do every day, but it gives you the opportunity to say whether you did it that week or not. And so it just collects all this data for you. It's yours, it's free, and it will summarize it for you. So it's called Nature Log, and the website for it is naturelog.base44.app.
Okay, so nature log is all one word, all lowercase letters. So nature log.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Base44.app.
Yes.
Okay, good. Well, maybe we'll have a whole bunch of Aboriginal Voices team joining you to see how we can fill this in, and maybe probably once a week, because we only get together Tuesday nights.
Yes.
But we'll try and see if we can get the whole team using it for a little bit this summer.
Yeah, that would be great. I just want to see how people respond to it and use it and experience with it. And, you know, maybe I'll launch it more in September. I'm thinking when classroom teachers might be interested in using it and having the data sort of summarized. But it'd be great to have people experience it over the summer and just see how it goes. And there is a streak counter. So for people who are interested in doing something daily and collecting, you know, how many times they've entered data, that's on there for you too.
I think the way I'm going, it's going to be a streak of one. One, because if I don't go in every day, my streak changes, right?
That's right. Yeah, it resets. But it does.
Not once a week?
It keeps track of your longest streak, though.
Oh,
so
okay.
My longest streak so far is 10, because I'll miss a day here and there. That's pretty good. But, you know, my son's on apps, and I have friends on apps, and they're up to 170 on whatever apps they're doing. So I know it's pretty motivating for some people.
Okay. Yeah, I'm motivated to find out more about how my feelings are mm-hmm. throughout the year. My you know, my big happy feeling is like snow up to my knees.
Right.
Yeah. Not very many people are that crazy. But, right.
It is nice. Like I said, I've been collecting data for the month of May, and so at the end of the month, it will tell me my top three like ways I was feeling. So it was like I was mostly grateful. And then I was mostly peaceful, and then I was curious. And so I know in the month of May in 2026, I was, you know, this is how I felt about the month. And there may be months, you know, where you have a different feeling. Maybe some people get the winter blues, right? And that would show up on your app.
Okay.
I'm not one of those people either. I'm with you.
Good.
I love
okay.
snow.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's an interesting way to look back at the month and have that data.
And so if I use the Nature Log app for more than a year, so then I'll see my June and my July, then next June and July, I could actually go back and compare the graphs. Will the graph go more than a year or more than a month at a time?
I think it should. I haven't gotten that far yet. There will be a feature available shortly where you can export your data into Excel. And so that's something that you can save on your computer and, you know, make a file. And, you know, eventually I hope to have some paper journals as well that have the same content. So for people that want to record it on paper, then, you know, you can always keep those and stick them in your drawer and pull them out when you
know
want
them. I'm that one of those people.
Yeah, this is partly what inspired the app. So, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, keep it. Yeah, Sean, you stop laughing, Sean. I know. Yeah, I still do paper logs for the radio.
Yeah.
Even though it's gone totally digital.
Right.
Yeah. Get them done, though. Now, that sounds like a really good idea for parents if they're looking for things to do throughout the summer, because the kids are not in school and you don't have, it could be out in the backyard or could be just going for a walk in the evening and you go back and fill out the app a bit, that day's page.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that goes with the challenge you gave us back early June, 23rd of June.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with you know, feeling nature.
Yeah.
So now this is sort of another way to keep track of those feelings.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because now does it give me a chance to record the place where I was? You know, like a trail, like Ox Tongue Trail, or Marsh Falls Trail, or a Pinacon Trail, those types of things?
It doesn't have a specific sort of field for that, but I think if you wanted to do that, you would write it in your observations. So you would start, you know, with you know, such and such a trail, and then your observation. And so then that would show up in your history. Mm-hmm. So whatever, you know, keywords you wanted to use will show up in your journal history.
Because quite often I remember a feeling and a place.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. one I can think of that goes way back to 1993.
Right.
And we were visiting an old fort in Cypress Hills National Park, southern part of Saskatchewan. And, you know, the bus was rickety and it wasn't fun to sit on. And it 30-minute bus ride back to Fort Walsh from where we were at Fort Benson. And they said, oh, well, the Benson Trail used to go just over here. And they showed us where it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go back to Fort Walsh on that trail. And walking along, put my hands out just about waist high and feel the tips of the grass as I'm walking and listening to the wind. And everybody tells me how flat Saskatchewan is.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was undulating, you know, because you get down in one of the coulees and you're close to some aspen trees.
Right.
And then you start to walk up. And the actual feeling that there might be a herd of bison coming frightens you.
Right.
Yeah. So, but that, I've got that feeling touching mm-hmm. the long grass, walking in it. On it. It was summertime, yeah. and it was just beautiful. So place,
mm-hmm.
when I think of that, and right. grass makes me think of Cypress Hills.
Yeah, place is actually a really strong memory trigger, for sure. I've done some research on that before. Mm-hmm. So if you can connect back to a place, even in your memory, you can build a connection to it, and especially if you're engaging your senses as well, that's going to make it extra powerful. So that's what you just described. Mm.
And that's what you've been asking us so far, three seasons out of four.
Yeah.
I wonder what you're going to say for the fall, but we'll have to kind of put it mm-hmm. like that. Now, Kristen, I'm thinking that, you know, you've got all these wonderful ideas. And how can people connect with you, maybe to come and spend time here at the center, or just going for a walk, mm-hmm. or learning more about activities that you're doing here?
Right. Well, I guess the best place is just my Facebook page. So it's Scenic Splendor Nature and Recreation Center. And if I'm running activities or host, other people are renting the center for activities, the information would be on the Facebook page. So that would be the primary way.
Scenic Splendor Nature Retreat.
Nature and Recreation Center.
And Recreation Center. Okay. Mm-hmm. Have to get it right. Now, that's only if I'm using Facebook, right?
Yeah, that's the only platform I have for this right now. I do have a website. It's kristenbuckley.com. I don't monitor it, but it will probably, I think it has a contact page if you wanted to reach out. And it does feature the center on here there as well. So I primarily use that for my speaking engagements, but I think it does describe the center. So if you don't have Facebook, as a secondary option, you could check that website.
Okay, that's wonderful. Now that you know me, last word's going to go to you. No, but it's it's July, and what are people going to be thinking about? And mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be holidays, just to explore the outdoors. And where are some of the places that come to mind, and not Hawaii? Okay? Mm.
Yeah. I think of a lot of provincial parks. That's where I like to spend a lot of time. Even if you've been there 100 times before, it's such a great place to make memories and bring families and explore. And I just, you know, I personally never get tired of seeing the same rock twice. So I would say that's a great place to go and visit if you have the opportunity.
Kristen Buckley, thank you very much for
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Special song for you.
I leave the porch light on just in case. Open that door, swings, and I see your face. And I will not even lie.
And I keep your photograph to this day, wishing and hoping that you're okay. And I'm missing you now.
Un héros n'a pétard en air ravé. Kitsaro n'a t'il n'étant la ravé. Zerna roma an n'étant qu'on est ravé. Tarahona.
All the same, love remains. This hurts inside me. Call your name to this day. Wish you were home beside me. We've left your bedroom in its place. Posters and memories unerased. And
I hold back my tears. Seems just like yesterday, although it's been years. And I'm missing you now.
I never na pitaha on my rave. Kitsaho na til nitao la rave. Zuna homa an nitao kone rave.
All the same, love remains. All this hurts inside me. Call your name to this day. Wish you were home beside me.
On just in case, open that door swings and I see your face. And I will not even
lie.
I leave the porch light on just in case, open that door swings and I see your face. And I
Anin bojo, Charles Kobenese que desnicas, megazido dem, Bachuana and Donjaba, Ojibwe and Ishnabe and Dao. My name is Shoshona Kish, and I am one of your hosts for A Day to Listen 2023. I'm honored to be speaking to our next guest who plays such a pivotal role in our child welfare system for our children, Dr. Cindy Blackstock. She is the executive director of the First Nations Child and Family Caring Society and a professor at McGill University School of Social Work. She's been doing this work and advocating for Indigenous children's rights for over 30 years. Cindy, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Thank you. I'm really delighted to be joining you, Shoshona, from unceded Algonquin territory here in Ottawa.
Wonderful. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell us where you're from and how you'd like to be known to our audience?
Sure. So my name is Cindy Blackstock. I am from the Gitxsan, which is in northern British Columbia. And I grew up all over northern BC, often in remote and rural communities. And some of my best friends were in the bush. They're the animals and everything else. So that whole knowledge set is really informed the way that I now look at the world. And I try to do my advocacy for First Nations kids. It's really one that takes into consideration the whole child and where they sit in the family and where they sit in the world, and of course in relationship to the land.
Yes. Do you want to talk about that traditional place of the child in community and relationship to land?
Yeah, well, a lot of people, when they think that elders are the most important people in our nations, but my experience is different. Elders absolutely are honored and respected as knowledge keepers, but their role is actually to support what I view as the most sacred, is the children. The children are the closest to the Creator, and they represent the perpetuity of our cultures in First Nations, Métis, and Inuit communities. And that's why the elders play such an important role in passing that knowledge along to them. So they are really, really key to not only ensuring our languages survived, our laws survived, our relations survived, but in looking after the land as well.
Mm-hmm. They really are our future.
I've always said to people, you know, the reason I focus on children is because children are the keepers of the possible.
I love that.
And we have an opportunity to raise a generation of First Nations, Métis, and Inuit children that never have to recover from their childhoods and who grow up feeling really proud of who they are and able to make respectful friendships with other persons of difference. And a generation of non-Indigenous kids that don't have to say they're sorry. And that, to me, would be a great gift we could collectively leave as a legacy.
That is a beautiful possibility. And it is something that we can do. You know, and I know that you're working in this profound way, you know, around policy and legislation, but also in terms of connecting with people, because I think this is our time. We get to decide what comes next. We get to decide how we come together as greater communities and what we want our legacy to be. You know, and I think by now most people, you know, across Turtle Island have heard about residential schools, and many have heard about the 60s scoop where Indigenous children were taken from their families and forced into the child welfare system. But many people don't know about the Millennium scoop. Can you talk about that?
What I think people need to know is that First Nations children and young people receive a lot of their funding for public services from the federal government because of an old piece of colonial legislation called the Indian Act, which was used to force First Nations kids into residential schools and is still with us. It's still on the books. So on reserve and in the Yukons, the federal government funds all public services. And that's why we have things with communities without water, or only 35% of First Nations have broadband access. It's really an apartheid public service system. But this has been allowed to continue forever. And then in the wake of residential schools, when the last one closed in 1996, families were left with the post-traumatic trauma, community trauma, from the residential schools with far fewer resources to deal with it. And yet, because the public didn't know any better, they judged the families as if they got more, not less than every other Canadian. Hmm. Now, when we were working in the late 1990s, we knew about these inequalities and we wanted to make sure that families had a chance to be able to safely raise their kids and recover from this trauma that affected them. And so we worked on solutions. And we found that there were many solutions documenting exactly the same problem, same solutions going back for decades. Canada was routinely choosing not to deal with it. And that meant that we were going to have to turn to the courts to force the government to do it, because there were more children being removed from their homes at that time than at the height of residential schools. And that number has only grown since then because Canada failed to implement the solutions that were already on the books that could have helped kids.
Why do you think that that is? Why do you think that Canada has failed to show up to these critical issues for First Nations children?
I think it's because colonialism is deeply rooted within the Canadian government. But our great hope is that is the Canadian public, because governments don't create change, they respond to change. And in the 6 weeks following the discovery of the children unmarked graves into Kamloops, Eva Jewell and Ian Mosby have said that more TRC calls to action were done in that following 6 weeks than in the previous 6 years. So when Canadians say, look, there's no space for giving First Nations kids less services than everybody else in this country, and they keep on it, then change is going to happen. We've gotten the courts to agree with us that what Canada is doing is racially discriminatory. And there has been some positive action resulting out of those court decisions for First Nations kids. But we're still dealing with things like lack of water, lack of equitable education. And that's where public engagement is really important.
these kinds of conversations are really important because the media moves in these cycles. And sometimes, you know, these really important things don't find themselves in the headlines. And, you know, and I've been thinking about this a lot as the numbers of children are found at residential school sites. And somebody mentioned that that number is over 11,000 at this point. And, you know, and I think that we need to keep the conversation alive so that that change can happen. As soon as the silence falls across everything again, then we're in big trouble.
Yeah. Dr. Bryce, who back in 1907 found that Canada was underfunding so severely, quote, Indian health services. And there are such bad health practices in the schools that that was leading to children dying at a rate of 50% per year. And that was covered by national newspapers at that time. And then headlines would be like, children are dying like flies, absolute inattention to bare necessities of health. And the government chose not to implement those reforms. And a lot of those children then ended up unnecessarily in those unmarked graves. Other children joined them because of abuse and other types of horrendous harms as well. But I've always felt like when the headlines die, the children do too. Mm-hmm. So every time, one of the things I'd say to the public, every time when you see a gross injustice and you know there's a solution, for example, Canada's lack of action on murdered and missing Indigenous women and girls in 2S plus community, and you look away, that allows for that harm to continue. We have to keep our attention. And when we do, positive change happens.
Yeah, real things become possible. You mentioned an apartheid system, and I had a chance to visit South Africa recently, and many people don't know that the apartheid system in South Africa was in some significant way based on the reserve system in Canada, that, you know, a team of people came here and studied that system and then brought it back there, you know, and I think that it's really important for people to know the history here and the significance of that, because we get to make history now.
That's right. And we more often can more clearly see human rights abuses in other countries than we can at home. And the reason for that is that they become normalized through kind of government propaganda and other things. The opportunity of learning from the past is to learn the lessons, not just the events, and feel guilty. That's not going to get anybody where anymore. But to learn the events in a way that prepares you and your children and others in your circle to actually cast a different type of Canada, one that lives up to the values it says it espouses, of justice, of freedom, of respect, and all these things, it becomes possible because we're courageous enough to embrace the truth. And without the truth, we aren't able to elevate ourselves or create a society that is deserving of all children in this country. So I think that this is very, very important to do.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, and I think that that people in general relate to that, you know, and I think sometimes the weight of the emotional response to things and feeling a sense of powerlessness in addressing them is really gets in the way for many people. I want to congratulate you on the big news that came recently around your work with Canada's Human Rights Tribunal approving the landmark $23.4 billion settlement for Indigenous children and families harmed by the welfare system. And this is the largest class action settlement in Canadian history. It's very incredible work, Cindy. And I know that there's a federal court that still has to approve it. But if they do, my understanding is that 300,000 people are expected to be compensated. Many of them are children. Yeah. What is the significance of this case for our communities beyond, you know, the settlement?
Well, I think one of my messages to Canada is you wouldn't have had to pay any of that had they actually acted on the solutions before we filed the case, because there would have been no victims and therefore no one would have been harmed and by its discrimination. And then it wouldn't have had to be paid. The fact that they were hurt, and in fact, the deaths of some children were linked to Canada's discrimination. I think it was really important that it be a significant penalty against the Canadian government, because they did this harm on the heels of the residential schools in the 60s group, and they repeated it again. They're a repeat offender for our kids. So there needed to be some measure of justice for each of these victims. And that's an acknowledgement that what they went through was wrong. It was illegal behavior on behalf of the government of Canada, and that they matter as an individual. We also need to have the supports in place so that they can, you know, use this money in ways that uplift their lives. So going on to school, or maybe going on the trip of their dreams somewhere, reconnecting with family, all these things that, you know, young people want to do, I think is really, really important. But the major public policy message is that Canada has to choose to do better when it knows better. Because otherwise, we're all going to pay the price for it. And most importantly, some children are going to pay for their childhoods. And it's not, that's totally unacceptable.
Yes. Yeah. Do you see a potential impact from this settlement on the Indigenous child welfare system moving forward for kids currently in care?
Yeah, well, one of the big pieces of this is that when we talk to folks who were victimized by Canada's discrimination, their number one goal is to make sure other kids don't go through it. So in addition to this $23.4 billion of compensation, we're working to stop the discrimination and make sure it doesn't happen again. And in that way, we've had something called Jordan's Principle, which we're really honored to work with Jordan River Anderson's family on, and he's a little boy it's named after, which ensures that First Nations children and youth get the services they need when they need them. There's been over 2 million services provided to kids under Jordan's Principle since the tribunal ruled in 2016. And we've also, since 2018, we were successful with a non-compliance order in getting services out there in child welfare. So more prevention services. In fact, the first significant investment of keeping First Nations children together with their families since Confederation. There's been all kinds of money government has spent to split for children away from their families. This is the first chance to keep them together. And that's in the billions and billions of dollars. But I want to make sure that the discrimination stops, that there are no other victims from Canada's discrimination, and that we actually set in play a relationship going forward where First Nations kids are viewed as being worth the money because they are sacred, like we started our conversation out. Yes. And that way they can grow up healthy and proud.
What can individuals do to create, like, to support that vision for the future and, like, directly impact how things move?
Write to your members of parliament and your members of the legislature, support Jordan's Principle. Say, look, the day is over for continuing to give First Nations kids less. Let's give them the childhood they deserve. Make sure that when someone comes knocking on your door at election time, I always print out a copy of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's calls to action on the murdered, missing Indigenous women and girls calls to justice. And I ask them, I say, what have you personally done to implement these and make a difference? Mm-hmm. Call your party. I want to know what you've personally done. And if they don't know that, I tell them that they're going to have to come back once they have an answer. Like, these are the things that actually make a difference. Make sure you wear that orange shirt, not just on Orange Shirt Day or when you hear headlines about these children in unmarked graves, but that you do that as many days of the year and wear it into the voting booth. That is really, really important. We actually even have a calendar families can order, and every month there's something that you can do free of charge with your family or with your community or with your school to implement the TRC's calls to action. I think another thing we were able to achieve with compensation that I'm happy about is that the estates of children and families who died before the compensation was awarded, but who had experienced the discrimination, they will be compensated. And those children in the unmarked graves under the Indian Residential School Assessment, they got nothing. And I think that's something that needs to be made right. I think that the government of Canada needs to compensate the estates of these young children. And so that's something else to bring to the attention of your member of parliament or your member of the legislature. Most important, there's absolutely things you can do. It's not going to cost you any money. It's not going to take a lot of time, but you can make a world of difference.
Amazing. Cindy, this will air on September 30th. And, you know, the theme for us this year is around Mino Bamatsuin, which in Anishinaabe Mawin means that good road or that good life. And we're talking about that in the context of Indigenous identity and Indigenous excellence. What are you reading? What are you listening to? Who is inspiring you right now?
Oh, my God. Well, first of all, September 30th is also my birthday. So my birthday wish for everybody is that you get onto the website and you do those things to support First Nations kids.
Yes.
In terms of inspiration, one is we're going to be honored to be hosting her 91st birthday, a party next week, and that's the incredible Elaniso Bamsawin. Folks, go onto the National Film Board. You can watch her over 50 documentaries on all kinds of topics on First Nations, Métis, and Inuit peoples free of charge, in French and in English, and often in First Nations languages. Do check her out. For me, of course, Jordan River Anderson and the legacy he left as Jordan's principal, and the incredible Shannon Kustachin, who created Shannon's Dream, a teenager from Attawapiskat First Nation who led the largest child rights movement in the country to get what she called safe and comfy schools and equitable education for First Nations kids. And I would also say the non-Indigenous kids who stood with First Nations kids by coming to the tribunal hearings and by writing letters to the government saying, you know, this isn't about charity. This is about justice. And this is about making sure I can grow up in a Canada where First Nations kids don't get left behind again. You know, those are the people of inspiration to me. And I am forever grateful that they're out there. And I hope that they continue to kind of multiply in number.
Cindy, it's been such a pleasure learning from you and talking to you about your incredible work. Chi Miigwech, for all that you are doing for our communities and our kids.
Thank you, Shoshana.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
A Day to Listen, in partnership with the Gord Downie and Cheney Wenjack Fund. Learn how you can take reconciliation at daytolisten.ca.
Down in the shade.
CFRC is stoked to partner with KPP Concerts on an awesome summer lineup. On June 27th, be sure to catch Long Range Hustle and Psychobilly Legends Reverend Horton Heat on June 28th. On July 3rd, check out alt country legend Fred Eaglesmith, followed by folk punk legend Billy Bragg on July 5th. Emo is alive and well on July 8th with Arms Length and Mo Kenny come to town on July 9th. Hip-hop pioneer Souls of Mischief are here on July 21st, and we'll get some hardcore action with Spaced on July 23rd. Almond Monica brings Arabic Jazz to Kingston on August 7th, and finally, August 9th, you can see Lucero Ben Nichols. For tickets and full information on these and other awesome shows, visit kppconcerts.com.
Hanging on the western star.